Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Daily Roto Hour here on Sports TV. I am Davis Maddock, joined by Colin Drew. And every week for the next 4 months on this program, we are going to be looking forward to Sunday's main slate of games from a daily fantasy perspective. This is just going to kind of be a loose, informal kind of first look at the slate, getting everyone ready to pump in their daily fantasy teams, and it feels very good and very weird to be previewing real games, you know, because, you know, we've been doing all these season-long drafts, and one of the things you realize is, we need to start drafting, like, defenses for specific matchups and everything, and now, like, we're at the point of where we're drafting, and we're drafting for things actually happening.
Yeah, definitely, and it's hard to rewire your brain, too, just from thinking about how things might shake out over the course of the season to how they're going to look in week one. A lot of interesting cases that, you know, guys like Todd Gurley, we might not be super high on over the course of the year, but they're definitely going to be guys we need to sort of reset our brains on for week one as far as the role that they might have. And I'm definitely excited to get into this and, you know, go game by game.
Yeah, very, very pumped. And, you know, there are going to be some games that we spend a lot of time on, and there are going to be some games that we don't spend that much time on because they are just not as great for daily fantasy purposes. The first one, though, and we're just going to be kind of going left to right here in the Daily Roto Optimizer for the main slate. So if you guys are Daily Roto subscribers, you'll be able to follow along in the Optimizer. And I gotta say, this very first game, Seattle and Atlanta, this is my favorite game of the main slate. I think that I plan on having loads of exposure to both of the quarterbacks in this game, to the four wide receivers in this game. I think Disley is, we'll see. I hope we get some reports on Sunday morning that we can update in the Optimizer, but I think that Hurst and one of the Seattle tight ends is possibly playable. Where are you at on this game?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the thing we know about the Seahawks is they do run a pretty efficient offense. They don't always run a ton of plays, but it is highly concentrated. And so you definitely know where to go. And if this game is going to go off, it is going to be through Russ, Lockett, and or Metcalf, and Chris Carson would be the only other option, I think, that really has a massive, like, slate-breaking potential on the game. I think if you are running double stacks, including the Seattle tight ends, whether it's Olsen or Disley, depending on the inactives, and that's definitely stuff that you want to monitor the Sunday alerts for, you know, you can run those guys in double stacks, but other than, like, outside of a game stack environment, I don't think you're really looking to target the Seattle side of things. And you know, Russ had, you know, two or three huge blow-up games last year, and this is definitely the type of environment that it could happen in. But for the most part, otherwise, you weren't really getting ceiling performances outside of those big three targets. So if I'm looking at stacks outside of this game, I really don't think I'm going to deviate too much from the obvious plays being Metcalf, Lockett, and Chris Carson.
So right now, our projections are pretty high on Todd Gurley. I find that to be a pretty fragile projection. I'm obviously, you know, a noted Todd Gurley hater. What are your thoughts? Priced at 6,700 on DraftKings. I mean, I think that our percentages look right. I feel very non-confident about playing him this aggressively, though.
Yeah, and I think, you know, he's the perfect example of needing to rewire your brain from the season-long mindset just because you aren't quite as worried about the injury risk with Gurley. His price is very affordable, and I think the price specifically compared to some of the other backs that might get similar workloads is pretty low. So, you know, we have him as a top 10 back on this slate, and we do have him projected for a passing role, but his market shares are lower than sort of the other alpha backs, and he's definitely getting boosted up a little bit by just the overall offense of the Falcons and the fact that they're expected to score more touchdowns than some of these other players. So for me, you know, goes against my gut instinct a little bit, but I do think that this is a good example of, you know, wanting to be able to trust the projections on a guy. Probably my biggest concern is just if I did want to stack the game is how popular it's going to be, and whether or not there's going to be a prevalence of like Calvin Ridley, Julio with Matt Ryan teams. And the weird thing that we saw from Matt Ryan last year is he didn't often drag along two or more players with him when he had big games. A lot of times it was concentrated in an individual matchup, and just like the double stacks for Ridley and Julio, I would expect those to be popular based on like season long ADPs. And so I guess that's my kind of pause is whether or not there are going to be other games that perhaps could be a little bit more concentrated than the Atlanta, where you mentioned there are, you know, four or five guys that I think are fairly viable in tournaments, including Russell Gage.
I mean, 100%. I think that this is the early candidate to be the, I mean, far and away the most owned game. I don't even know if there is a close number two game in terms of game stack. So I think for maybe Tampa Bay, New Orleans, if there are some Brady truthers out there, I guess, would potentially be close. But yeah, I mean, I think probably actually for single entry and three max, I would just not consider this at all, because I would expect, for example, in like the $33 single entry on DraftKings for maybe 25% of the player pool to have one of these quarterbacks stacked with one of their receivers or something like that, like a really high percentage for a 12-game slate.
Yeah, we usually see quarterbacks spread a little bit, but as you get into single entry, yeah, you could see that. I was thinking maybe like 15% for the two quarterbacks combined, but then higher ownership on the individual pieces.
Yeah. And, you know, they are like, specifically in the case of Metcalf and Ridley, I think they are like even better. Like, I really want to play them stacked because I think they are so, their projections are so related to game script where, you know, if Atlanta is winning this by 10, I think Ridley is obviously going to have a harder time hitting his median projection. And Metcalf is definitely a ceiling player where, I mean, we saw this a bunch of times last year where if Seattle has a big lead, he ends up being, you know, pretty useless for fantasy. Next game here is Las Vegas and Carolina. Not expecting this game to be super popular. I have to say, though, pretty interesting to me because these are two really bad passing defenses. And I am sort of thinking that there's some sneaky upside in this game.
Yeah, this is definitely one where, I mean, obviously Christian McCaffrey is on the slate. I think it's going to be tough in general to fit him in this year, but week one, it's going to be a little bit more affordable than it would be for other weeks. And so, you know, on FanDuel, I think CMC is even more easy to fit in just with some of the value. On DK, I think he'll be like 20% owned in tournaments, and you know, I think he's still kind of in play. You do have some value to make it fit. Obviously, he's going to be the number one projected running back almost every week. As far as potential upside spots, I guess, you know, the Las Vegas side of things, I think, is pretty interesting. One of the things we saw in week one of last year was that there were some huge performances from rookie wide receivers that went off at sub 5% or even sub 1% ownership. You know, whether that was Terry McLaurin, Marquise Hollywood Brown, like guys who had massive ceilings and people weren't ready to pull the trigger on them yet just because it's hard to project what their role is going to be. And so I think like Henry Ruggs is pretty interesting from that perspective in tournaments. He's a little bit priced up at 5,100, so definitely not a guy that I would want to play in cash games, but I think he's the type of player that you could see at 1% ownership on this slate where you don't really know how he's going to be used, but you do know that there's a lot of big play potential and a lot of targets that are vacated from the offense. I think the other interesting thing for Oakland to monitor is just going to be, and less for week one, but more for week two moving forward, is just the interaction between Hunter Renfrow, Dalen Waller, and Henry Ruggs as far as snaps, just because they could eat into each other's snap share a lot at the slot position.
Yeah, I completely agree. One of the things, I'm making this stand right now. I am going to play a lot of Henry Ruggs in single entry GPP, like MME, I'm gonna, he's not projected super well in our optimizer right now. I'm gonna boost him a ton because I do think that he has, you know, legit kind of slate breaking upside, and I'm very in on that. I'm gonna love jamming in all of these rookies. Moving now to Miami and New England. Hot takes from the Daily Roto Optimizer. Cam Newton is projected as our second highest scoring quarterback, and he really not projected as, you know, that much of a rusher. It's just, can you ask for an easier matchup than at home to the Miami Dolphins for your first start as a New England Patriot? I don't think you can.
Yeah, so I guess gut reaction, would you play Cam in cash games this week without knowing what the offense is going to look like?
He is currently, as you and I are talking, he is saved in my DraftKings.com cash game lineup as my quarterback. I think I might get cold feet and play Carson Wentz instead, because Carson Wentz is like the, you know, he's like the 18 condom play at, you know, he just is going to grind out 18 DraftKings points that, you know, that's going to happen. But Cam, I think, is the, he's not going to be that owned in your head-to-head games. And I think he, like, obviously he can sweep the slate for you because he could score 3 rushing touchdowns.
Yeah. So I'm pretty interested in this game for tournaments. I'm more of a tournament player than a cash game player, but I don't think I would be able to stomach like the uncertainty about the role and the rushing potential for, like, we do have him projected for 20% of the rushing touchdowns, which is pretty substantial. And we just don't know how they'll use him in the goal line. But I do like this play a lot for tournaments. And I especially like it because I think that, like, there's not going to be much ownership on Edelman because people are scared about who Cam's going to target. There's not going to be much ownership on Harry because training camp reports have been up and down and not glowing. And so I do think that even if Cam is popular, I think that his targets are going to be extremely low owned. And so I like that from a tournament perspective. I also really only have interest in Devontae Parker or Gesicki on the Dolphins side of things, more so in a bring back environment than I do is like one-off pieces in other lineups.
Yeah, I think I'm on board with that. If I wanted to put my sleeper hat on a little bit in this game, I do think there is a decent chance that one of Jakeem Grant or Isaiah Ford ends up being like a pretty solid cheap play, just because, you know, we have Miami projected to have to pass a ton in this game, obviously, as they are going to be trailing against the New England Patriots, who have probably a weak secondary, actually, with all the guys that opted out for them. And I love the Jakeem Grant, you know, big play upside.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think for the Patriots backfield, you know, it's probably a stay away situation entirely until we see some roles.
I'm not playing. Maybe I would play Rex Burkhead on DraftKings, right? Maybe there is some argument to playing him there because Damian Harris is going to be inactive. I mean, we have a reasonable projection for Rex Burkhead at 10 DraftKings points, right? I actually think he is like a board. Like, if you were to play him over Antonio Gibson in single entry, because Gibson is going to be so chalky, I actually kind of like it.
Yeah, so I don't think that one will be a wait and see position for me. The next game, I have a pretty hard time trying to figure out, the Colts versus Jaguars. Colts is a surprisingly high team total, around 27. They are big favorites, obviously, over Jacksonville in Jacksonville, but not a stadium you're super intimidated by anyways, and especially with kind of the current COVID climate. Rivers generally doesn't have a super high ceiling, but the one thing he does do is lock on and spam targets to individual players. So, punting tight end, I think that Doyle is definitely going to be in play as one of the punt tight end options. Really curious to see how Rivers' target distribution breaks down, and then even more curious to see the rushing workload, because if they do get ahead, we expect Indy to try to run the ball. You've got Marlon Mack there, you've got Taylor there. The presence of both of those guys, I think, is going to make sure that nobody plays either one of them. I'm not excited about that, but I do wonder if you have any opinions there.
So Doyle, I'm not excited about. I gotta say, though, he might be the most owned tight end in cash games, because people kind of look at, they see the team total, they see, you know, Ebron's gone, they see there's no clear slot wide receiver on this team. I think Ebron's going to be an incredibly popular play. Like, Doyle is going to be a more popular play than his projection suggests, basically. So I think that is sort of interesting. My thought for this game is I don't love the Indianapolis side because I don't have a great sense of how they're going to distribute their scoring. Like, I think maybe they have a larger role planned for Zach Pascal than the public might expect. I think they might legit rotate all three running backs, Jonathan Taylor, Marlon Mack, and Nyheim Hines, in a way that kind of makes them undesirable. The plays that I would be interested in this game, you know, obviously Laviska Shenault. If I don't play a little bit of Laviska Shenault, I'm a massive hypocrite. And Eifert at 3,300 to me as well, I think is a pretty interesting MME sprinkle.
Yeah, I think like Eifert's just not on my radar at all. Would be the type of guy I only got to in like the 1 p.m. only slate. Shenault, I think the price is fair. He would be a sprinkle play for me more than a core play, but 4,400, definitely kind of in the mix if you do think he's going to step immediately into a decent-sized workload. And then DJ Chark, another guy I probably won't end up with very much exposure to just because of the game environment. And he is priced at sort of an appropriate $6,300 level.
Yeah, I think that seems about fair. This will be a short conversation. The New York Jets against the Buffalo Bills, a 17-point team total for the Jets, a 23-point team total for the Bills. I think the players that I'm interested in this game are the defenses, and I think that's about it.
Yeah, so I mean, if you haven't been following offseason news, the Bills did draft Zach Moss. He's expected to split the workload with Singletary, and it could be like a hot hand type approach where you don't know on a week-to-week basis who's going to get 55 versus 45% of the snaps and carries, and you don't necessarily know who's going to get the goal line work. So definitely off of the Bills running game. I mean, the matchup with the Jets is the type of matchup you'd be looking to use Josh Allen in, and so I do think Allen single stacked with one of Diggs or Brown, I think, is an option for tournaments, not kind of the primary spot I'm looking to, but I think I'm willing to consider it a little bit more than dismiss it. The Jets, you know, it's going to be tough. Le'Veon Bell is 5,600, and he definitely is not the guy that we're used to. Man. But he still was getting like 65% of the workload last year.
He's a legit good play. Yeah,
they didn't bring in anybody either.
Yeah, it is. I mean, they have Frank Gore, and I guess that's the kind of the one thing where you'd be like, you know, Adam Gase, he's such a hardo. Maybe, you know, maybe something happens. Now to Chicago and Detroit. And I actually think that people might think that this is like a gross game or whatever. I actually see some real game stack potential in this Chicago and Detroit game. I feel pretty decent about both of these teams' abilities to score against each other's defenses because I think both of the defenses are pretty mediocre.
Yeah, and I think from a news and notes perspective, there are a few things that are worth calling out. The biggest thing is whether or not David Montgomery is going to play in this game. And you know, the Bears may have tipped their hand a little bit by what they did by cutting some of the backup running backs and depth players that they had, because behind Montgomery, you know, they obviously have Tariq Cohen more of a passing role, and then it's Ryan Nail, Cordarrelle Patterson. So Montgomery's health is going to be important. If he's ruled out, I think you have to wonder who's going to get those carries and whether or not it would shift the Bears into more of a pass-centric mode. And so I think Tariq Cohen at 4,900 is at least somewhat interesting in tournaments, and especially in a slate where there's going to be one really popular value play in Antonio Gibson, you know, it doesn't take a lot for someone to appear in an optimal, just kind of outscoring that player. So I think that Cohen will be pretty interesting depending on Montgomery's status and what it might mean for the overall game plan for the Bears. Obviously, on the Lions side of things, you know, Adrian Peterson signed. We don't exactly know what his week one role is going to be. We do know that it could lead to a pretty big committee in Detroit. So I'm a little less optimistic, and I'm definitely not looking forward to using the Lions run game at all.
So if it came out that David Montgomery's out, Cordarrelle Patterson is starting at running back for the Chicago Bears, what would you do with him in GBP?
So, I mean, he'd be 3,400 at that point. I think that even if he's starting, what we would probably expect is that they're still going to throw the ball a little bit more. They're definitely not going to use like a normal run heavy game plan with him out there. And so, I mean, it would depend where the projections had him. I think he would definitely be in play, but I wouldn't be lock buttoning him at 3,400 just because I would expect them to still use Cohen pretty heavily.
I mean, I expect that Cohen would play like all the third downs, pretty much like all the important pass blocking snaps and stuff. But I would certainly not be able to help myself. Cordarrelle Patterson priced at 3,400 on DraftKings as a wide receiver. I would probably play him in cash, I think. Like, I really would not be able to stop myself at that point.
Yeah. Yeah, and then on the Detroit side,
they have a bunch of interesting guys.
Yeah, like their pass offense, I think, is pretty stackable. Galladay had a huge ceiling last year, and that was with mediocre, inconsistent quarterback play. You've got Matt Stafford back, 6,200, a pretty affordable price tag if you do want to go with a game stack in this type of game. And then you know that you have a little bit of concentration in the offense between Galladay, Marvin Jones, TJ Hockenson, as far as the passing side of things, if they were to fall behind.
Yeah, I think I'm on board with most of that. I think Hockenson to me looks like the guy who has the ability to provide a decent amount of leverage, because you look at the guys, you know, priced around him at tight end. I expect Hurst to be more popular because of the game stacks. I expect Goddard to be more popular because Wentz will be more owned. You know, I expect just a huge chunk of the pool to be going towards both Chris Herndon and Jack Doyle. I guess we probably could have talked a little bit about Herndon during the Jets and the Buffalo game, but to Hockenson, I think you can play as a standalone, and obviously is like, any Matt Stafford lineup, you play two of Galladay, Marvin Jones, TJ Hockenson. And I think that's super strong. And I think he can throw four touchdowns pretty easily.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I agree that he will be less popular than some of the other options, especially, you know, George Kittle being on this slate as well.
Yeah, that definitely does swing things. Okay, another game that, the total doesn't necessarily anticipate it being, you know, a crazy game or anything like that, but Philadelphia and Washington early on looks like it is going to be, I guess I'm not sure if it's going to be a super popular quote-unquote game stack. I am very certain, though, that it is going to be an extremely popular individual play game. I expect Miles Sanders to be really popular. I expect Carson Wentz to be popular. Zach Ertz. I think DeSean Jackson is going to be one of the most popular plays on all of DraftKings. And then on the Washington side, both Antonio Gibson and Terry McLaurin are going to be incredibly, incredibly popular.
Yeah, I think that is definitely true. And one of the things, especially week one with so much unknown, I am going to try to get away from the wide receivers and tight ends that seem like they're trending towards being mega popular, just because there is so much unknown, both as far as, you know, the roles of individuals, maybe not as much with DeSean Jackson, but also the volatility of the position in general. So I think you did identify the plays that will be popular on the Washington side. McLaurin's price, I think, you know, he is arguably an alpha wide receiver in this league playing for a bad team, and he's definitely priced a peg below that. It wouldn't be surprising to see him priced in like the mid 6,000s. And so he's definitely a guy that I think should draw attention. He's a guy that pops in our projections. He's a guy that does have a pretty high ceiling. Antonio Gibson is definitely going to be what makes or breaks a slate. Just a lot of uncertainty as far as what the Washington football team will do with their backfield and with Antonio Gibson. Peyton Barber might eat into some workload. J.D. McKissic is a guy who can play a lot on third downs, good pass catching back. And then we don't really know how they're going to use Bryce Love. So you could see a scenario where, you know, Gibson is either a $4,000 back in a three-headed backfield, or right, you could see an alpha that gets used in the passing game and gets like a really high workload.
I 100% think that he has one of the wider range of outcomes. Like my confidence bands for his projection are very small, because I think that if you told me that he got the third most touches in this backfield, I'd be like, well, you know, I mean, I guess that is in fact possible. Also, I've never seen this before. This is hilarious. Every Washington football team running back, Gibson, McKissic, Barber, and Love on DraftKings, they are all priced at exactly 4,000. That's just really funny to me. Also, hot button topic, Logan Thomas, 2,800. I think he's actually legit in play. I do.
I mean, I'm always fine with a punt tight end. It's not a play that I want to make or break the slate. It's not the type of guy I would probably put into single entry or three max build, but like, I have no issues with punting a starting tight end on most slates.
Yeah, and I mean, at 2,800, I already know my buddy Sammy Reed is like lining up his cash lineups to get Logan Thomas in there and wait for the inevitable touchdown. And I think that if you were wanting to look at some ways to do bring backs for your lineups where you have Wentz double stacked or whatever, I think Steve. Well, what do we think? What do we think Steven Sims is going to be rostered? Because I do like him in a vacuum. I really don't like him at like 13% owned.
Oh, so. I think he'll be like 2%. And you know, he's sort of a similar type of player to Antonio Gibson as far as how they were using him last year, getting some targets, but also running some jet sweeps and things like that. And it is expected that Dontrell Inman will be the starting wide receiver opposite McLaurin. Not a guy that we're really high on, but did want to cover that piece of news. And yeah, I don't see any reason that Sims would be popular at all in this spot. I do think he should be included in game stacks. And I think you're fine including, you know, Gibson as a bring back in the game stacks as well, just because, you know, the pass catching prowess is a lot of the reason that people are interested in him.
Yeah, I think that is true. All right, another game here before we get to break. Cleveland and Baltimore. I guess very interesting in the sense that I have basically no interest in the Cleveland side, but I love everyone on Baltimore, right? I think, you know, Lamar is the strongest play. Lamar, a better play on FanDuel, I suppose, where the salary cap is a little bit looser. Andrews, incredibly strong play. Marquise Brown, I think, is a potential cash game play even on DraftKings. That might be a little bit of a hot take. And I mean, right now we have the split between Ingram and Dobbins projected pretty evenly. If you are of the opinion that it should lean more in Ingram's favor, he's probably a smash at 5,500.
Yeah, really interesting game. And, you know, we saw Baltimore just roll offenses last year and roll on teams. And so what happened when that happened is Lamar brought everyone along for the ride with him. So definitely can stack Lamar with Andrews, Brown. But one of the surprising things was we actually saw in Lamar's ceiling games last year that he actually brought Ingram along for the ride in a third of them. So if you are building Lamar stacks, I actually want to include Mark Ingram in that group this week. And I think, you know, there is some risk that Dobbins gets more of a workload though opening week, but I'm fine in tournaments to roll with him. Definitely would try to avoid him in cash games. And if Baltimore's up this much, I'm probably going to try to include Browns on the way back in the game stack. The pricing isn't necessarily doing us favors there. So I would say Jarvis Landry is probably my favorite one to get in there, but I'd be fine with Landry and Beckham in there. It's not optimal from a pricing perspective, just because we have them as mediocre individual values. So that might be an example where I use a key boost rule for the bring back instead of forcing it to happen.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair. Also, I am cool playing Baltimore Ravens players unstacked, right? Like being like Lamar, whether it be Marquise, whether it be Andrews, because I think they are going to have some weeks where they are low volume, but they score five touchdowns, you know? And so I'm cool kind of trying to isolate the touchdowns as opposed to correlating them all together.
Yeah, I think for Lamar, I don't think I would play him unstacked just because at his price, he's got to do so much and he's definitely going to bring people along with him. But I agree with the individual pieces on the other guys.
I think that seems kind of about right. Do you have a big preference between the exact same priced Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry? Again, a funny DraftKings social experiment.
Yeah, not really. I mean, a slight preference maybe to Jarvis Landry just because I think he's legitimately been the better player the past couple of years, but not like a huge preference. It'd be fine to let ownership tie break that one. The other guy I just wanted to get your thoughts quickly on, if you'd include them in double stacks, was, you know, Baltimore has Miles Boykin and Willie Snead both priced around $4,000 as well. And I could see a situation where, you know, those guys step into more of a role if Baltimore is not obviously able to run as many three tight end sets. Maybe they're using wide receivers more. So are you punting at wide receiver with Baltimore at all? Or only
yeah, we can think the guy I would imagine having a little bit of slate breaking potential is Miles Boykin. If Miles Boykin is in fact playing the role that I have projected for him, which is kind of that replacement second tight end, you know, playing a lot in the slot, you know, doing a lot of run blocking, you know, if he plays 85% of the snaps or something like that, I think that is pretty, pretty strong, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair.
All right. So our next game here, Green Bay, Minnesota. No interest in game stacking this one for me. I think Thielen and Davante Adams. I mean, Davante Adams is one of the strongest plays on the slate in my estimation. You know, we have him with a 30% market share of that Green Bay offense. I think he is an incredibly strong play.
Yeah, this is a game I probably won't get to in single entry three max, but I do think in larger builds where you're building 20, 50, 150 teams, I think that this type of game has a lot of characteristics that do lead to winning millionaire maker lineups. And I think part of that is, you know, it is a high total game. It could be competitive. Both offenses could open it up if they have to, even though they prefer to run. And you don't really know who the second wide receiver is going to be for either quarterback. And therefore, you're going to get almost no ownership on either of the guys. So for Kirk Cousins, we know that Thielen is going to be the primary target. But beyond that, it seems like B.C. Johnson is going to start as the second wide receiver. Seems like Irv Smith could have a little bit of a bigger role this year. And so double stacking Cousins is going to be something where the single stack is extremely popular, double stack less so. Same thing on the Green Bay side, where Adams should be popular for all Rodgers stacks, but I don't think people really know who to choose for the second one. So I know we did see some winning millionaire maker lineups last year with Rodgers in a similar situation. And I do think that over the course of the season, this is the type of environment that you do want to try to target in larger field tournaments.
I can get on board with that. You know, I want to be short. I definitely want to be short Aaron Rodgers kind of as much as possible, but this week is, it's a good week to chase it. Okay. The Los Angeles Chargers and the Cincinnati Bengals. This one is, I think, my main kind of off the beaten path target in single entry and three max, because Joe Burrow gives us a couple things. One, he gives us sort of a projectable ceiling, in the sense of we haven't seen him play before in the NFL, but he was, you know, such an incredible player in college, where I think his range of outcomes is very wide. And he also runs a little bit. So, you know, he could add 40 yards and a rushing touchdown or something that kind of like what Kyler was doing weeks 4 through 8 last year. I think that he kind of has a similar range of outcomes to those early Kyler games. I think Boyd is priced appropriately. I would like for AJ Green not to play instead of what I have him projected for now, which is I kind of have John Ross and AJ Green splitting that secondary wide receiver role. And I think CJ Uzuma has a chance to be a fairly decent part of this offense as well.
Yeah, and I think from a notes perspective, you touched on it a little bit, but AJ Green, one of the big pieces as far as notes, they do expect him to be active in the game, but kind of on a snap count, pitch count type of thing. So takes away any ceiling from him. It also could damage the ceiling of like the complementary pieces on the Bengals. So if you are stacking, definitely need to keep that into consideration. The other thing on the Chargers side is just trying to understand what this offense might look like with Tyrod Taylor at quarterback after so many years of it being a Phillip Rivers led team that would be willing to kind of chuck the ball up in the air and spam targets to individual guys. I think right now we're projecting it definitely to be more run heavy than it was last year, but I'm pretty concerned as far as the number of plays that they run and whether or not it could impact that materially. And so, you know, I definitely want to like Austin Eckler a little bit. I think that Keenan Allen's price is reasonable, but I have so many concerns just about the style of game that the Chargers might play that it probably will keep me in like a wait and see mode for the opening week.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair. I think that these are exploitable. I think this is a clear exploitable spot, especially if Mike Williams doesn't play for single entry and three max. Like I kind of like the idea of playing Jalen Guyton, Joe Reed, you know, one of these guys, and just as like a bring back and trying to find, you know, literally like a 0.8% owned, you know, 14 point game or whatever, especially if we think that Burrow is going to be pretty strong, because you would likely be able to play in that game. You would likely be able to play or in that game stack, you'd be able to play Christian McCaffrey and Mike Thomas.
Yeah. Yeah, on the Bengals, I think, you know, Tyler Boyd is the only one that of the receivers that we know for sure what his role is going to be. And then the other thing I think is a consideration is just Joe Mixon. He is priced a tier ahead as far as pricing of Todd Gurley and Miles Sanders. So I do think that leaves him as sort of a potentially a secondary option there. But he is a guy that, you know, especially late in the season last year, they leaned a lot from a workload perspective and could be one of the you know, 10 or 12 alpha running backs in the league.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Okay, Arizona, San Francisco. these games were surprisingly competitive last year. You know, we have Arizona with the really low team total, but they were able to actually put up some points against San Francisco last year. I am, of course, bullish on the Arizona offense. I think that, you know, the Kyler Murray, DeAndre Hopkins, Christian Kirk stack with the San Francisco wide receiver bring back is really interesting. And this game also is going to have a huge impact with late and actives and late reporting because, you know, right now we are projecting Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel to play, but they might both not play, where we're going to get really cheap Trent Taylor, really cheap Richie James, maybe even really cheap Jordan Reed. So I think that this game is really interesting.
Yeah, and if you are a subscriber to Daily Roto, Davis will have you covered with the lineup alerts before the 4 p.m. slate. So that'll be really important for, you know, the overall main slate, making late swaps. It'll also be pretty important just for those of you guys who are playing Showdown slates or 4 p.m. only slates. So definitely a big advantage there. And we should be rolling out the late swap optimizer for NFL later this week as well. So, I mean, Jimmy G had his two best games of the season against his Cardinals team last year. Arizona was the flowchart team against the tight end spot. So
yep.
I think they gave up 75% more points on average, which was massively different than like the second worst team. George Kittle was, without even factoring any of that in, George Kittle was going to be the tight end one on the slate because Travis Kelce is on Thursday Night Football. So, you know, Jimmy G and Kittle definitely in play. There is a scenario where San Francisco doesn't have to go into the same game scripts they did last year because the Cardinals aren't able to generate as much offense. So I do think there's a scenario where like a Raheem Mostert is in play as well, but it's not really the starting point for me. The starting point would be kind of Jimmy G, Kittle, and then hoping that one of Samuel or Ayuk is active with using the Cards guys as a bring back, because we know that Kingsbury will for sure keep his foot on the gas and willing to get aggressive with the number of, you know, passing plays that he calls.
Yeah, I mean, I hope that this, like, I have high hopes for this game, of this game just getting, you know, very wild and aggressive, basically. And do you have any thoughts on Mostert, Tevin, McKinnon? Do you think any of those guys are playable? I mean, we have Mostert for a playable level projection. And Arizona, obviously, if that offense, you know, lives up to their expectation, you know, we would expect them to be, you know, running a lot of plays and encouraging the other team to run a lot of plays, but I'm not quite certain.
Yeah, and I know, you know, what we have projected right now is that McKinnon is playing kind of a third down role in that backfield, and that Mostert and Tevin Coleman are both getting some work with kind of a 2-to-1 split in Mostert's favor. Definitely a thing that is, you know, only an MME, only as a sprinkle, probably a play I don't even touch in that format. Probably most like likely to use it in like a 4 p.m. only type of format.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. So our final game here, we have Tampa Bay, New Orleans. And I'm wondering, Colin, do you think that this is going to be a popular game with, you know, how much people love Tom Brady, people love the Saints? You know, we think that, you know, that the Superdome is sort of the Coors Field of the NFL. Or do you think, you know, kind of the uncertainty with what the Buccaneers are going to look like is, you know, going to keep people off? And, you know, we also have Bruce Arians stating that Mike Evans, you know, just as of this last week, he has a soft tissue injury, missed practice on Wednesday, and is going to be day to day for the Sunday opener. I would imagine that's probably nothing. But you know, maybe it ends up being a little bit something. I'm not sure. I like this game theoretically, but then I also know kind of in the back of my head that these teams really do want to run the ball.
Yeah. I think this game will be popular. It's certainly not going to go overlooked entirely, but my early lean was that the Seattle and Atlanta game would be a little bit more popular. The individual plays for New Orleans, like Michael Thomas will carry some ownership, but he's priced up at $9,000. So I don't think it's going to be excessive ownership there. Alvin Kamara at 7,200 will probably be the most popular player on the Saints, assuming that everything is good to go with him for week one with the contract and everything. And I think that people won't play the secondary options on the Saints. So I don't expect Manny Sanders at 5,700 to be popular at all. And I think that Breeze will be, you know, 3-5% owned, but not like the highest owned QB on the slate. So I think that you'll see some popularity here, but maybe less so. And part of that is just that the total, I think, is a little bit lower than people might have expected. I think I would have thought this would have been like a 51-53 point spread based on all the offseason chatter and buzz. And that's really not what we're seeing here.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really remember the last time that a New Orleans-Tampa Bay game in New Orleans was not the talk of the town, right? You really would assume that that would be a game that everyone was trying to get players in, but I think that reflects the impact of Jameis Winston, right? Jameis Winston just encourages the scoring of points by the mere existence of the fact that he just doesn't care and he likes to YOLO. He likes to YOLO the ball around, and you know, our projections are more conservative as it relates to the Buccaneers than they would be in this situation last year, for sure. You know, and I think, and it's, and also that's true of the New Orleans Saints, right? Every year Breeze gets older, the team really does transition more and more to a run heavy team, especially in home games.
Yeah, and we've got them projected to be running on 46% of their plays, which is one of the highest kind of marks that we have on the slate. You know, the questions with Brady is, you know, how much of his desire to spread the ball around in New England was system based and talent based versus, you know, coming over to the Bucs where we saw the targets all kind of funnel to Evans and Godwin last year. You add in Rob Gronkowski on this team, who we don't expect to step into an immediate every down role to start the season. He's probably playing as a third tight end, but when they do use him, it's going to be in, you know, high impact situations like the red zone and kind of third downs where they really need him. I mean, Chris Godwin feels like the comfortable play for the Tampa side of things, just because there's zero injury concerns there. Even if Brady does spread the ball around, like the one, you know, type of player that he always tried to target was the reliable, kind of sure-handed chain mover type. And so I think that from that perspective, Godwin feels like he's, you know, the lowest risk play on the Tampa side of things. I have no interest in the Tampa backfield. Are you going to try anything there, or is it just it's kind of priced out at this point?
Oh, I mean, I got to, right? Because this will be the one game this season where Rojo will, he should clearly be the lead back in this game, right? I would expect that Keyshawn Vaughn is probably going to be a game day inactive, or I would say I would be surprised to see Keyshawn Vaughn active in this game. So then it'd be a three back backfield. One of those running backs would be Ronald Jones, right? Or one of those running backs would be LeSean McCoy, who is not going to play, you know, hardly much at all. Leonard Fournette, only been with the team, I think he's only been able to practice three times. So I would imagine, you know, he's not going to be the passing down back or anything like that. So if there were a Ronald Jones spot this season, this is probably going to be the spot. So I will be mixing him in a little bit. So we are going to head into our final break here at the Daily Roto Hour at Sports Grid TV. We have taken you through all of the Sunday main slate games. So that's all of the noon games, all of the 4 o'clock games. Just broke a little bit of news here on the show with the Mike Evans soft tissue injury. When we return, we are going to take a look at our favorite game stack from a ownership and projection, you know, combined perspectives. So, my favorite game stack, you know, considering everything involved, considering projected ownership, considering the team totals and everything, for me, it is actually going to be the Chargers and the Bengals. First of all, I think you can play Tyrod and Eckler together. I think Keenan Allen obviously is going to be a strong play. I think that I do kind of like the gamble on Jalen Guyton or Joe Reed. And, you know, I'm really hoping that AJ Green is just straight up inactive for this game so that I can play Burrow, John Ross, and, you know, CJ Uzuma and Tyler Boyd all together. And Joe Mixon, who our projections really like as well. So that's the direction I'm going for my favorite game stack.
Yeah, I think my favorite game stack this week is going to be the Baltimore Ravens, Lamar Jackson, double stacked with Marquise Brown, Mark Andrews. I think guys that both could see an increased role this year. Obviously, the ceiling on the Baltimore offense is so high, and being able to bring it back with Jarvis Landry is probably my preferred route, just in the PPR scoring format. I think that week one, we can definitely make this type of stack fit, and you're not going to be able to make Lamar stacks fit every week. So trying to capitalize it when it's still affordable from a value perspective.
So outside of Marquise Brown, who is the second guy that you are most excited to stack with Lamar? Other than Marquise Brown or Mark Andrews, are you going to do it with Willie Snead? Are you going to do it with Mark Ingram? Are you going to do it with Miles Boykin? Any of those guys?
So I think I need to do it with Mark Ingram, and that's something that is unnatural for me, but it was showing up so heavily in the data last year. And I think it's something the field does not utilize very much at all. So I want to include Ingram in that group, and I think I need to go out of my way to force that to happen in at least some of my lineups.
Yeah. So everyone, there we go. That was kind of just, you know, a fun first look at the DFS main slate on DraftKings and also some FanDuel ideas as well. You know, I think one of the things that we didn't really touch on it much is this is going to just be an amazing slate for tournaments because everyone is very confident about the outcomes. We are all so confident that we know this team is going to do this. This guy is clearly ahead of this. And then, you know, about an hour into the slate on Sunday, you are going to be so upset because a guy you've never heard of just scored for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And you're so frustrated as James Robinson breaks the slate. So I would encourage you all to not be overconfident in your projections of the outcomes, really embrace volatility and try and build lineups that are as anti-fragile as possible because this opening weekend is going to be nuts. Thank you very much for watching and listening to the Daily Roto Hour here on Sports Grid TV. We are heading out. See you next week after week one.
Build digital-first customer relationships with Salesforce Digital 360. Connect every marketing, commerce, and digital experience on a single platform. Innovate fast with easy-to-launch sites, campaigns, and apps. That's more relationships, more revenue, more return, and more success. Salesforce Digital 360. Hear from our customers at sfdc.co/digital360.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.